Well, hello, everybody out there on the internet, wherever you might be watching. Mike, one of the this is another of the weekly open mics that I've been hosting every Monday. I host different weekday morning, well, here in the Pacific time, 10 a.m. Morning, 1 p.m. Eastern, and 6 p.m. GMT, among other time zones. But every weekday, most weekdays, I'm hosting different events, usually interviews with different people, mostly people I have known for a long time, and occasionally people I've never met. And on Mondays, I host an open mic, and it's intended for musicians and poets and storytellers, but really anybody is welcome. If you got five or few minutes of something to share, like a song or a couple of poems or whatever, and people can sign up, as it says on the bottom of the screen, scrolling by at davidrovics.com/POMM for Pandemic Open Mic Mondays. If you did already sign up at some point along the way in the past few weeks, then you probably are getting an email from me every Monday morning before the open mic goes live, and you are just welcome to join anytime. And if the green room, or the virtual green room, what they call the broadcast studio, fills up, then there'll be it'll get less filled up, and then you can click again if the link doesn't work. And if you didn't get an email from me, if you signed up but you didn't get an email from me this morning, then it's probably because it went to your spam folder. So check your spam folder. And lovely to see Rob Johnson just appear there in the green room. Hi, Rob. We have a wonderful lineup of folks, including at least, I think, one or two people who have not been on, or maybe if they have, it's been too long and I forgot. And Mike Marker's coming up, and he says, I look like I just woke up. And it's true, because this, I have not had a haircut or in, 3 months, 4 months, right around the time that all the hair salons closed, the barber, whatever we call those places, you know, they all closed. I think the one I used to go to, that's been around for decades, appears to have closed permanently. But right around the time that they all closed, I also, our buzzer, you know, that was what my wife Reiko has used to cut my hair with when I don't go to Rudy's hair salon, the buzzer broke. So the hair salon's closed and the buzzer broke. But we just bought a new buzzer. It just arrived in the mail yesterday. So by next week, I might be looking slightly more presentable, although that actually involves bothering to, you know, buzz, you know, which is like takes 10 minutes or something, but it's always like 10 minutes that I never seem to have. 10 minutes is a lot of time to commit to anything, it seems. When you have three children, it's like you have to be careful what you do with those 10 minutes, because they'll be gone, and then you could have done something else, like with those 10 minutes. I don't know if them, you know, maybe. Anybody who has young children who are not in the school, you understand what I'm talking about. The rest of you might be mystified, but good. That's good if you are. And I, as usual, will start out the open mic with a song from me. And I've written a couple of songs since the last open mic. And also for the last couple of open mics, I've had my baby as a co-host, which has made me do songs that I didn't just write. I did a cappella and a poem, but now the baby is out with mom, and I don't have a co-host, so it makes it a little easier. And let's see, we'll make this, where'd my phone go? We're gonna do a little theater here, just a moment. It's a little extra theater because I just stepped on one of my kids' toys and it made a noise, but that wasn't part of the plan. But I wrote a song called Ballad of the Oregon Employment Department. And I'll sing that for you. But it starts out with a phone call, and I'll call them now. This is the number they set up on June 10th for specifically gig workers. Because here in Oregon, some of you are in Oregon who are watching, we have last NPR, the National Public Radio, said, and the last thing I heard, which maybe was a week old, so things have maybe changed a bit since then, I don't know. But basically, there are 400,000 unemployed people in Oregon, you know, who are newly unemployed, I think, and 100,000 of them are gig workers who qualify now for the new pandemic unemployment thing from the, because the usually we don't qualify in most states for unemployment when we're unemployed, but now we do, at least until the end of this month. So that started on April 10th, I believe, was when this pandemic thing went into effect, where we're supposed to be able to get unemployment. And so ever since then, I applied, like many, like the other 100,000 gig workers who are unemployed, I applied and I got rejected. And that puts me in a minority of people who have actually received a response of some kind, because there's of the 100,000 unemployed gig workers, 30,000 have gotten a response. And that includes rejections, right? Like what I got. So then once you get rejected, you're actually, this is apparently part of the normal operating process. You get rejected and then you apply again, which they recommend at that point. And once you've been rejected, you call them and you talk to a person, right? So every day, many times a day, this is what I do. I call them. This is the pandemic line. And let's see what happens when I call them this time. Oh, what a surprise. It's a busy signal. Again. Let's see if I just call back again. Now, see, busy signal, my daughter's 14 years old, incidentally, and she didn't even know what a busy signal was called. Like, she's heard it before. And I think in England you call it something else, but she didn't realize that this is actually called a busy signal. But that's a busy signal, which is all that ever happens between the hours of 8 a.m. and 5 p.m. if you call the pandemic unemployment line. And you can try calling them at a minute before the hour. Like in some states, apparently, my friend Dana lines up in Washington. He tried this thing. He called them a minute before the hour in Washington state. And that worked. He got through. But if you call them a minute before the hour here, you just get told to call back at 8 o'clock. And then when you call back at 8 o'clock, yeah, you know, you get the busy signal. So I just thought I'd, you know, illustrate live what happens when you call. And I'll do a song about that busy signal now. And then I will turn it over to all the wonderful guests who we have coming up for this 12th Pandemic Open Mic Monday. And this is this is a song called Ballad of the Oregon Employment Department. And I like to think it's my best effort at writing a Kimya Dawson song, if Kimya were to write a song about the Oregon Unemployment Department. Sit down for a minute, I'll tell you a story about lots of different people, including yours truly. When the pandemic hit, I had to cancel all my shows in the fight against the virus. I guess that's how it goes. They said to call this number if you need help with food and rent. It's the PUA division of the Department of Employment. So I get up every morning since the beginning of the spring. But if the department is open, the phone never rings. It's always beep, 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 the line is busy. Beep, 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 you'll have to wait. Beep, 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 the only answer, the tone of a failed state. There just aren't enough programmers who are still alive, who learned how to program back in 1985, when the last update was made to this broken mess, like a testament to the definition of stress. It's always beep, 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 the line is busy. Beep, 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 you'll have to wait. The only answer, the tone of a failed state. My application
application was rejected with notes that made no sense. It's been 3 months since I applied, since I've been staring at this fence. Survival sourced completely from the crowd, hearing stories of the hunger as I listen to the sound. Beep, 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 the line is busy. Beep, 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 you'll have to wait. Beep, 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 the only answer, the tone of a failed state. The department head got fired as the tragedies mount, but we're still waiting for relief, still zero at last count. If you think the keg is burning, that there's tumult on this shore, if those checks don't come in soon, who knows what's in store? It's always beep, 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 the line is busy. Beep, 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 you'll have to wait. Beep, 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 the only answer, the tone of a failed state.
Okay, there you go. Ballad of the Oregon Employment Department. And now for our first guest of this already looking wonderful open mic in the series, we have Steve Deasy. Steve, hello.
Hello.
Let's see. How does that sound? I need to plug my mic into the computer so I can hear you. Okay. Let's try that. Now, hi.
Can you hear? Hi. Can you hear me?
I can hear you. You can hear me? Excellent.
Am I coming through good?
Can you hear me?
I
hear me and your speaker, so I see you must be hearing me.
So can you hear me well?
With a 3 second delay.
With a 3 second delay.
Well, yeah, actually, you sound really good. Yeah.
Okay. It's so
no, but it's fine. Once I get off the.
Whoops. Something went. Now I can't hear you.
What's going on? Yep, I don't know what's happening with my mic, but you're sounding great. So, yeah, okay. What you got? Steve, you haven't been on the show before, right? This is the first time.
No, I haven't. It's the first time. I've recently quit working and quit the United States. So I'm living in Windsor, Ontario now.
Where are you?
Windsor, Ontario, as a Canadian permanent resident. And I have a thing coming up Sunday. I'm doing a fundraiser for Rashida Tlaib. On another one, I'll play the song that I wrote for that.
Excellent.
But tonight, I want to do a song that was written by Tom Prasada Rao. And it's very relevant right now.
Oh, great.
He wants everybody in the universe to play it and sing it. And so I'd like to do that now. Some people die for honor. Some people die for love. Some people die while singing to the heavens above. Some people die believing in a cross on Calvary Hill. And some people die in the blink of an eye for a $20 bill. Some people go out in glory with the wind at their back. Some get to write their own story, write their own epitaph. Sometimes you see it coming. Sometimes you don't know until you run out of breath with a knee on your neck for a $20 bill. Oh, brother, I never knew you. Now I never will. this promise to you. I'll remember you still. So now let this be our communion. It's time to break the bread. Do this in remembrance, just like the good book said. Sometimes the wine is a sacrament. Sometimes the blood is just spilled. Sometimes the law is the devil's last straw. The future unfulfilled. Oh, like the dream they kill. Like a $20 bill. For a $20 bill.
Yes, gorgeous, gorgeous rendition, Steve DC.
Thank you, sir.
Thank you. We actually, Bev Grant sang that song, I think, 2 weeks ago on the open mic. So it's I need to hear Tom Prasada Rao's version of his song. But I love the covers that I've heard so far. Gorgeous.
Tom's version is on Facebook. But I if you go to my Facebook page, it's and go down there. I repasted it there. Maybe I can send you a link. Tom, as you may know,
yeah, I can find it. And are you involved with any particular online activities these days during the pandemic?
Well, yes. I'm still on the steering committee of People's Music Network, and there's several song swaps that people can participate in. Sometimes on different subjects, sometimes just general pandemic song swaps like this one. I was at the virtual Great Labor Arts Exchange and the virtual People's Music Network gathering, but I'm just kind of easing into the online thing myself and learning how to use these use a cool USB microphone. And I hope I'm sounding as good as I hope it sounded. but I'm like everyone else.
You're
I'm
sounding really good, and whatever's going on with the software works well with the audio delay and all that, because it's the sound quality is really good, even though there's a 3 second delay. So whatever you're doing, it's working really well.
Thank you. You too. I mean, and thank you for doing this. I think this is really important that you're doing, and I hope that you actually. I hope on one of these open mics that you go to do that song, and it ruins your song by them actually answering the phone.
Yeah, I hope so too. Steve, we'll hope to see you again on the open mic soon. How are things in Windsor? What's the general feeling of everybody's getting their $2,000 Canadian every month, and nobody's going hungry or getting evicted?
That's exactly what's happening here. So the mood is much better. I think Canada is taking much better of the people, better care, and. You know, they kind of figure people need it and we'll deal with it later. That's not going to stop them from politically harping about, like, oh, the deficit and all that other kind of stuff. But it does seem like people in my own neighborhoods, one across the street works at the Windsor Casino, and that obviously hasn't been open. The two ladies, the twins that live next door to me, had both been getting about $500 a week, Canadian, and that's probably more than they make in their actual jobs. One of them has had to go back to work, the other one's still not working. But in general, it's really good here. The biggest problem in Windsor, Essex, is that the virus is affecting, there's a lot of agriculture in Windsor Essex, and the virus is affecting migrant workers much more seriously than the rest of Windsor Essex. And that's been a real problem, and they're trying to figure out how to deal with welcoming the migrants in a way that's safe, and being able to house them in a way that that they aren't subjected to close proximity with many, many people, which is why I think the pandemic has been really serious for the agricultural workers of Windsor.
Are they getting the $2,000 a month?
They're getting something. When they come here, they get quarantined for a couple weeks. But the biggest problem they're trying to deal with, right? And then when they, if they contract the virus, they get isolated, and you know the government's paying for that. The government set aside about $50 million to deal with issues around the migrants. But the bigger issue is how to change the model of how people are housed,
yeah,
so that they're not in such close quarters and in a situation where the virus spreads. So so the county I live in is still, you know, what I want to call stage two or something. It hasn't gone to stage three, but it's largely because of infections in the migrant community in Leamington and in Kingsville, which are, you know, most of the tomatoes of Canada come from Leamington, and it's a very, very, very big agricultural area. You don't have to drive far from Windsor to that it becomes all farmland. So, but I think the conversation, I mean, the problem is the same as in, say, California, but the conversation about what to do is seems more humane in Canada than it sometimes is in the U.S.
It's not
deport all these people. It's like, oh my God, we need the agricultural workers to be safe, and we need the food that they provide. So I wish I knew more about it to talk more intelligently.
That's a great tidbit. We'll just move on to the next guest, but thank you so much. It's exactly the sort of information I was looking for. What's happening in Windsor? I think that was a brilliant few minute summary. It's part of what I like about doing the open mic is getting a little survey of what's happening in the world from musicians.
Yeah. The main thing I'm going through is I had a daughter in Seattle who canceled her wedding in May, and I have another daughter who's postponing her wedding in October in Michigan. I can see Detroit from my house, but I haven't been able to cross that border since early March, and it doesn't look like that's going to open anytime soon. So I have a lot of people that I can't see.
Yeah, not unless you become a registered nurse or something.
Yeah. Well, they might let me over because I'm an American citizen, but then Canada might not let me back, or they might quarantine me if I come back. So
yeah.
Yeah. So, well, thanks so much.
All right.
David.
Thank you, Steve. See you again, I hope.
Oh, definitely.
Good.
I'm going to threaten to be a regular.
Oh, excellent.
Yeah.
Great. And Steve DC on the board of People's Music Network, which also hosts a regular weekly open mic, which I still have yet to join. But anyway, moving right along across the Atlantic to Dublin, Ireland. Stephen Grandel, wonderful to see you again.
Hi, dude.
What's been happening in the past week of quarantine for you?
Not a lot. Anything happening in Dublin? We went down to the squat. They didn't do the gig thing that they were going to do. But Amira went. They're having a cafe on Thursday.
Yeah. Are there any outdoor gigs happening?
Not that I know of.
No, but we did the next phase this week.
No, but Amira's telling me that we moved into the next phase this week, so. And we're allowed to do all sorts of things, but I think the virus is actually going back up again.
Yep.
So I don't know.
We'll see.
We'll see. Yeah.
You got another story about Manus for us?
Yeah, another Manus story. Yeah.
Excellent. This one,
it goes back, it's only about 9 years or a bit less, something like that there, 9 years ago. There was the Shell to Sea, they had a protest.
I've been there. Shell to Sea was the first time I ever had to try to carry a full-grown injured adult across a field. And oh my God, it is a full-grown man is so heavy. It's incredible. But anyway, the police knocked him down a hill.
As usual, they're Manus stories, you know. But yeah, Manus went down to the Shell to Sea camp.
Excellent.
So I really
can't wait to hear about it.
Okay, so
great.
So Shell to Sea and Manus. Manus and his daughter Sharifa went down to Rossport for the bank holiday weekend. There was a protest camp down there, benders and yaks and a kitchen and toilets. Some kind of a deal had been done. Another dodgy politician had signed over ownership of Ireland's natural gas reserves to Shell Oil. It was a bit like your crooked uncle had sold the family farm, and now the family had to pay rent to live there. It just didn't make sense if you thought about it. Manus figured most people hadn't time to think much. The world was run that way. Run by a few corporations, a hierarchical corporate empire, which regardless of what picture it presented of itself, cared for nothing. Living or dead, in the past or in the future, cared for nothing but profit. And there'd be no storm in this empire's Bastille. This empire's Bastille was the whole section of the planet marked off as the third world market. And the West was going to keep those prison walls in place as long as it could. No. It's hard to imagine a mass uprising in the West. There wouldn't even be any stopping the Shell Oil Corporation in Mayo. But you could slow them down. And other corporations would be slower to move into the coast of Ireland, so long as they saw some resistance. Manus wanted Sharifa to see some resistance. A whole camp full of people who hoped for a fairer, less hierarchical, less abusive, more humane world. Manus was a bit dubious about the outdoor life. He had hemorrhoids, and the thoughts of having to wash the blood off his bum every morning in a portaloo was not an appealing one. Oh, the ignobleness of the body. He had problems that weren't physical too. He'd been on his own too long, not just physically, but emotionally. He made determined efforts. He went out to Shomer Spree Autonomous Social Centre for his meals and interacted with people as best he could. He flirted with a few women too. Oh, that kind of thing, unless it actually gets realised, could all have been in his head. And it seldom did get realised with him. He lacked both confidence and a willingness to play the game. It had once been said of Manus that he not only expected women to come to his bed, but to turn the sheets down themselves. That was a little of an exaggeration. He would turn the sheets down. But it was true that if a woman wanted him, she had to make it very easy for him to get her. Meanwhile, he was taking Sharifa down to Rossport to see a little resistance to corporate rule. But he wasn't really in the best of moods for it. His lack of social interaction left him with an exaggerated sense of social ineptitude. Even on the way down, he was already feeling awkward. Shit, what did he know about anything? With the rest of the protesters, he shared the basic premise that a few corporations shouldn't be allowed to rule the world. But other than that, they had little in common. As always, he had half an eye out for a woman. He noticed Paula on the train. Long red hair, tight prim dress. He figured her veneer would scratch off pretty easy. He kind of liked it anyway. In his youth, Manus had seen himself as some kind of a free spirit, unwilling to give in to a brutal, dull, senseless, wasteful, greedy society. He felt like he had won a few rounds in the beginning, but it was a long fight, and he'd been losing regularly for a time. So society, and he figured Paula, would only be able to see him as a beggar, a bum, a useless parasite on social security, and a drug-taking wastrel all his long life. The journey down took 6 hours, and it was dark when they put up their tent, with the midges having a feast day on their flesh. Next day, he found that using a portaloo when he had bleeding hemorrhoids wasn't any worse than he had expected, and there he was, bodily functions, operating at a protest camp. Lots of lectures and talks through the day, but Manus didn't hear anything new and found them difficult enough to sit through. He read some of his stories out round the fire at night. Paula, she of the red hair and prim dress, showed interest in them, so he read her some more, and they talked a little. She said the stories lacked any joy or contentment. He agreed with her. He wondered if their little intimacies, personal history stories, and cigarettes and tea round the fire would end up there at the camp, another person who couldn't relate to him. She was staying on at the camp to take part in some action, whereas he was leaving on the Sunday, and that could have been it. But they exchanged numbers and invitations to visit. She helped to carry the bags and ran holding Sharifa's other hand to catch the bus back to the train station. He smiled like a kid embarrassed after they hugged goodbye. It was a good feeling. He was old, but he wasn't dead. Thought about Paula. It wasn't straight lust. She was a big flat-chested woman. Red and Swedish, whatever that meant. They hadn't had sex, but he felt some kind of fidelity toward her. When he next saw any woman whom he had previously flirted with, he noticed his active withdrawal from the flirtatious dance, however flimsy or imaginary such dances were. A week or so and a few text messages later, Manus went up to visit Paul. She lived in the mountains. He wasn't sure what he was looking for. A friend, he figured. He wondered if the friendship, if it happened, would be physical. He had the jitters of a teenager inside his old body. He didn't know Paula. She had told him she came from a right-wing family in Sweden and had decided they were all mad when she was young and left when she was a teenager. She said she had 2 kids. The oldest one was 17, the youngest 11. He didn't know how old Paula was. She was 41. She told him as they ate magic mushrooms in her sunroom. They were old mushrooms and had lost lots of their potency, but still reality revealers for all that. The house had a field beside it with horses in it. All you could see were fields, trees, a large stables, and beyond it, the bay. He was content sitting in the sunroom. She seemed keen on getting him to look at stuff on the computer. And after a bit, he consented. Yo, the computer was in her bedroom. Nice to be brought into a woman's bedroom. It had been years and years. And here it was, big, messy bedroom. Cats and dogs and piles of dirty washing on the floor. Her computer was just a laptop sat in her bed. And she sat on one side and he sat on the other side of the bed. That's your sleeping space for the night, she said, indicating half of the bed. Thanks, he said. He'd been unsure where he was to sleep. The sunroom had big settees, so did the living room. But maybe she didn't have much bedding or something. Anyway, it wasn't a dead cert to sex. But lying next to a woman on her bed was obviously a lovely, desirable thing for Miles to be doing. And they lay next to each other on her bed, underneath the sheets. Him in his boxers and her in her pajamas. Not very revealing or sexy pajamas either, so maybe this was her sleep next to men without sex pajamas. Some people would then feel that kind of thing. She asked if it was strange for him being in bed with a woman after so long. The answer gushed out of him instantaneously. It's just fucking wonderful, he said, and she was delighted with the acknowledgement of her powerfulness. She could make this man feel wonderful. They both lay on their sides to face each other. He put his hand out to touch her. Oh, making a play for me now, she said, as though such a scenario had never been envisaged by her. The last thing that could ever have been on her mind when she invited him into her home and then into her bed to spend the night. "Oh, making a play for me now," she said. And he said, "Feels natural enough." And it was. Physically, mentally, emotionally, the two human animals took great pleasure in each other. Her vagina was shaved. Her breasts were tiny. Her smile was broad and innocent. She had the remains of a removed hemorrhoid on her bumhole. Next day, they went to the woods and collected sticks and made a fire. That night, they sat and talked. Paula had been sexually abused as a child. Manus could not cope with what had been done to her as a child. He had seen her as a child the night before in bed, an innocence on her 41-year-old face. It had disconcerted him a little, a psilocybin-induced hallucination. There was no innocence on her 41-year-old face now as they sat alone on her settee in front of the fire. She said she had no problem. She sounded sad and bitter. Manus said he had loads of problems. She said he knew. Manus brought Sharif out to Paula's the following weekend. Paula, three dogs, four cats, and a rabbit, and the surrounding fields filled with horses bedazzled Sharifa. It was like a circus for her. Then there was the two daughters, like older sisters for her. But like older sisters, they soon found the seven-year-old a nuisance. Still, they played for a bit. Manus was still unsure with Paula. He wasn't even sure if they were going to sleep in the same bed again. Paula said something about not doing many one-night stands, but that might be, he might be one of them. She seemed to want to hold that option open. That night, she sat checking her Facebook page in bed. He asked if she wanted to touch or hold hands. She didn't. She went on about only getting to know him and finding it worrying that he should question her decision to have no physical contact as they lay in bed. She often lay in bed with friends who never presumed any rights of contact. Perhaps, she suggested, they should end the sex aspect of the relationship so he wasn't confused or hurt or disappointed when she said no. She liked to talk in ultimatums with him. He just nodded. They probably weren't suited. She read out a couple of chapters of Atomized. Then she lay closer and touched him. She joked that if he didn't want to be touched, she wanted to know why. He didn't laugh. "What happens if I grab you?" he asked, and she says, "Oh, so you want to play the grabbing game?" And they played the grabbing game. And part of them understood. There was a detachment in our grabbing game. They were two human animals wanting physical pleasure, but they weren't two fully human animals. The physical contact had nothing to do with mental or emotional contact. Paul seemed happy with that, like they were superhuman animals detached from their minds and emotions. Paul came out and hugged him as Manus and Sharifa got on the bus next day. Bigger, maybe, as she wasn't a very tactile person. Manus contacted Paula once more after that, but she said she wanted no more contact and didn't feel the necessity of an explanation. Manus didn't blame himself or Paula. He knew it was just her life experiences and where she was at now and how she reacted to him. He knew he wasn't the worst, and he hoped someday to meet someone else who would know it too, but he wouldn't be holding his breath waiting. Manus started bringing booklets made by the Shell to Sea crew down to the Doyle. It saved them postage money, and as he went to deliver them, he used to stick up little flyers saying, "Socialism plus freedom equals anarchy," and "How much more will you take? Make the rich pay." And "If you think capitalism is working, ask someone who isn't." Someone once said something about, "Because we can do so little, we do nothing at all." Bringing booklets to the Doyle, asking why some corporation owned Ireland's gas reserves and fly posting anarchist messages wasn't much to do. But it actually made him feel a little better. A little symbol of resistance to corporate power gave hope for the possibility of a culture which was more fully human, less hierarchical, greedy, wasteful, and abusive. That's a story for the day.
Fantastic, Stephen. Thanks a lot. You once again. Wonderful. That's you don't skip the hemorrhoids. That's what I like the best about your writing.
Well, what can I say? It goes with my teeth. My lovely smile.
Definitely a lovely smile. See you next week, Stephen.
Yeah, I hope. See you next week, man. Take care. You will.
You take care. Stephen McRandall, who should be a world famous author if the publishing industry were not, like, you know, gone, along with the music industry and a lot of other industries, increasing numbers of industries. Moving right along. Now, D.O. Let's see. I think you're Mike. Oh, there we go. Hey, great to see you. Great.
Good to see you too. Thanks for doing this, by the way.
Thanks for joining us. You haven't been on before, have you?
No. I just found out about it maybe 4 weeks ago, 3 or 4 weeks ago. Guess I'm not paying attention. Anyway, out here in Massachusetts, in the U.S. of A., things are still a bit grim, but not like down south.
Yeah, really. Yeah. It's differing quite a lot state by state now, it seems. And Massachusetts is, you got things are it's not exponential growth disaster kind of situation at the moment anymore, right?
Right. It's fairly better, better than what's happening across the way in New York, but even they're doing better. So, of course, all of this is pretty much unnecessary, of course, due to the Mad King and his enablers in D.C.
It sure seems to be the case.
Yes.
Yeah. And you got? Are you a songwriter or a storyteller? I'm not looking at your description in the sign up at the moment, so I'm just going on memory.
Right. It's mostly poetry and prose, and I've been working on an epic poem since this began.
Mm.
So it's a work in progress.
Excellent.
Yeah, and I should point out, Dave, and dear listeners and viewers, that any pronouns that you hear in this piece are not directed at you, but to the perps of COVID days. Should I begin?
Very good. Yeah, sure. Let's hear it. What you got?
Okay. All right, let's get in. This is called 2020 Hindsight. And as I say, it's a work in progress. I'll straighten this out a little. There we go. What have we learned from what we have lived here? Land of opportunity, lacking for much unity. We travel in circles, victims of uncertainty or the opposite, often wasting energy, angry, looking for others to blame, driving each other insane. Two wings of our one entity. 100 years ago, we suffered together so and soon forgot the pain until it returned again. Then bread lines as far as the eyes could see and the long lost memory. Typhoid Mary, contact tracing, leaders with empathy and not much attention to the source of all this pain, sorrow, death, and dissolution, not to forget all the confusion. Look over here. Forests once sheltered, so many creatures now helter-skeltered, captured and eaten, sold in cages or tortured and beaten by humans so hungry for profit, they've forgotten the comfort of just living in nature instead of their pocket. And then get on guard when we reveal it or mock it. Behavior once scorned in old tomes and court edicts, now worshipped above all else. Another contagion that might not kill you but could ruin creation or love and harmony with any given relation as we witness the end of countless other lives and existence of species we are so sadly mistaken. While watching the news, the plague on our place, the chance of a cure, or the latest sensation, which means nothing worse for expiring species in diminishing locations, our machines grind down into lifeless dust, drawn out by building hot winds into recorded nightmares of complete devastation. How much distance have we put between us and this planet? Enough to make sure who's ever in charge, thinking they ran it, were making it worse through selfish deceit, transparent theatrics, folding and stupid with putrid showmanship, apprenticed to his own devolution, and posing, always posing, sitting for portraits, never hung, though hanging may be too good for some. Illness self-inflicted and predicted, unspoken requests, he please just get sick and die, we won't cry. What about those whose silence stood by, or bought in with the sin of hatred, exclusion, the ugly fusion, muddled illusion, the speeches of mammon? More important than life itself, once precious as your child and the wild, the wonder, even the thunder or a sunset, rising from memory or the moment. Where did you just put your hand? In what sequence did it land? Near that handle or that lever? How did the weather become such a marker outside that window, first lighter then darker, out there where it is moving about unseen, stealth feeding on everyone's health, more calling out, I can't breathe, it's waiting for your reopening, just groping for your lungs and wagging tongues of freedom, locking and loading and corroding the steely look in your eyes until your loved one dies and you follow suits empty of souls, taking endless tolls on your future, your dreams. Yelling won't help you be more of a man, reacting to something you don't understand, like the child you once were. Still unsure, you react. You contract the virus, not guileless, stronger than you. The price of life, what is it? How much? The cost of a casket, a chair, a crutch, and such grasping. We're asking for a certain degree of detention for those we are loath to mention for their economic pretensions. When time comes unwound, day after day, after week, when we seek the usual, it goes south into confusional. Which moon is it? What happened on what day, would you say? It is the worst pandemic in generations, or 100 years, or recorded history of misery and purposeful injury, original sin and slavery, now kneeling on necks, the law on the street among wrecks, burning with anger, short on regrets. And it goes on.
Nice taste of the piece, Dio. Thank you for sharing it.
Thank you for being here.
And yeah, that's a very scary mask, but it's scary times.
First time I saw it was on the face of one of those lock and loaders, right-wing militia people that were showing up at various peaceful demonstrations. So I thought I'd pick up on there.
Yeah, the militias in Iraq like to wear masks like that as well. But yeah, they're popular in different different places.
Fitting for a pandemic, I think.
Yeah, yeah. There's people have been putting a lot of skeletons in their yard around here. It's like not just a Halloween thing anymore. Yeah.
Right.
Commentary. Yeah. Right. Thank you, Dio. Hope to see you again.
Take care.
You too. And then crossing back north of the border and moving west a couple, you know, several thousand kilometers. Mike Marker, are you there? Mike might be taking a break or something, but that's Mike Marker's bookshelf. Let's see. Let's see if we can move on to Mr. Johnson and check back with Mike and Rob Johnson.
Rob Johnson.
Hi.
Mr. Blake. Hello.
How are you holding up there?
How are you holding up
in Hove?
In Hove. Hove's touch wood, we're okay. It's not it's not having a massive increase in infections, which is happening elsewhere in the UK. The government policy now seems to be to do nothing until there are lots of infections, and then clamp down another lockdown on us city by city. As infections rise, the government is going to put lockdown on. So it's going to be shutting the stable door after the horse is dead, basically, really. Yeah, it's like that. I think it's like that. You know, we're talking about how you're amazed that the Western democracies were actually seeming, apparently, at first to take care of their populations. Well, I think they've kind of stopped that. At first, yeah. That's certainly like... Boris's message is, go off, the pubs are open, off you go, don't wear a mask, ooh. And then they'll just stick lockdown on. But it's okay, because the economy's working again, a bit.
Are they doing the universal basic income thing, like they're doing in Canada?
No, I don't think so. I mean, I keep thinking, I ought to have a look at the grants. They announced there was going to be... money given to the arts, which they've been ignoring, but the amount of money is going to be presumably going to, as they said, the jewels in the crown, so things like Glyndebourne,
the symphony,
the Albert Hall, to make sure the jewels in the crown don't suffer. But I imagine the sort of places that we pay won't see a penny of it. No. And certainly people like us won't see any of it. But we're not opera singers. Why should we expect it? We haven't got a fucking orchestra behind
us.
Yeah, we're not trained. We're not properly stamped with. You know, what can we expect? Scum like us, eh? Ungrateful, whinging.
Yeah.
Communists.
What are we complaining about?
Outside agitators. Yeah, just shut up and die. Shut up and go to the pub.
Shut up and die. That could be the motto for the current era.
Yeah. Shut up and die. It's good for the economy. It's good for the UK. Yes. Shut up and die.
Next chorus.
Next chorus.
What you got for us, Rob? You got a song you've been writing?
I could do a song about Louise Michel and the commune, or I could do a song about the pandemic. What do you fancy?
Maybe both. Maybe I mean, we got time, actually.
Okay, all right. I'll do the pandemic song first of all, and then we'll do the cheery Louise Michel song. Are you sure?
Wonderful.
Wonderful.
Oh, yeah.
Okay. Oh. Right. This is called Victory in Europe, because of course we have the highest death rate in Europe. Well done, Bodger.
Oh, Rob, your input level is high.
Should I stand further
away? Can you turn it down? Yeah. That's great.
Try that.
I'll go in the next room if you like.
No, that's much better.
That's much better.
Okay, sorry. First, our care homes were expendable. Our pensioners could die. Our bus drivers were expendable. There's not a reason why. There had been no preparation, no plan, no PPE. 60,000 smiling faces disappeared. 60,000 smiling faces disappeared. First they stopped making the front page, then they stopped making the news. When the dead become expendable, they get easier to lose. And those that never mattered, they're easier to ignore. 60,000 smiling faces disappeared. 60,000 smiling faces disappeared. Oh, this is victory in Europe. This is victory in Europe. Yeah, this is victory in Europe. This is victory in Europe. But don't forget your fags and bunting. Don't forget to wash your hands. Your nurses are expendable, and I'm sure you'll understand. Stockpiles are so expensive, it's our money tree, not yours. 60,000 smiling faces disappeared. 60,000 smiling faces disappeared. And now our children are expendable. The economy comes first. Key workers, they're expendable. The poor always die first. There'll be no preparation, no plan, no PPE. But you could always have more children. Ooh. You can always have more children, I do. Whoa.
Yes, his victory is beautiful. His victory is beautiful. Yes, his victory is beautiful. Victory is beautiful. Well, don't forget your flags and bunting. Don't forget your flags and bunting. First our care home is respectful, our children respectful. This is victory in Europe, the highest rate of death in Europe. Don't forget your flags of hunting. Oh, don't forget your flags of hunting. And 60,000 smiling faces disappeared. 60,000 smiling faces disappeared. 60,000 smiling faces disappeared. 60,000 smiling faces. 60,000 smiling faces disappeared.
Gorgeous song. And your guitar sounds like it's running through some great distortion, even if it's not. But you could make out all the words anyway. Definitely, it's picked. The mic is picking up more of the guitar than the voice. And the input level is loud. But I love that song.
Thank you.
What you got next?
Well, I try not to. Well, I was wondering something cheerful because I do Louise Michel. I was. You know, sometimes you talk about. You talk about people and you people you admire and you find they have kind of difficult kind of moments and like they have embarrassing sort of, you know, like Bakunin, embarrassing the anti-Semitic. And then you come across someone like Louise Michel, who's always on the right side of history. Like this is animal rights, pro-oppressed colonial people. Just, yeah, the more I read about Louise Michel, she's got the great... A great quotation about teachers as well. Teachers, or was it the unknown foot soldiers of the future? I just think so. This is for Louise Michel. God sits on his high horse on top of his hill, and he blesses those weapons that wound, maim, and kill. In the name of the Father, the name of the Son. St. Peter stands guard with his old ack-ack gun. God sits on his high horse with all the best views, as his cops kill the Arabs and round up the Jews. So repent all your sins, citizens of the plain, or your father will smite you again and again. God's nose at the foot of the hill. People ride round on a grand carousel. Children play free and glass Louise Michel. And I know I'd rather be any day. Well, this God's just a puppet that works hand in glove with those hands that abuse you and tell you it's love. Deal the marked cards for the old pack of lies that heaven's somewhere up in the sky. So you on your high horse on top of your hill, you give your White House and cops and God's will. Out of the cloud of the cloudless blue sky comes Louise Michel, and there's fire in her eyes. And up the God's nose at the foot of the hill, people ride round on a grand carousel. Children play free and press Louise Michel. And I know where I'd rather be any day. Any day. Here's to the Congi and Louise Michel. Here's to no gods and no masters. If I had to choose between heaven and hell, I'd choose you and the streets of Montmartre. Every day. Every day.
Oh, man, that is a classic. Fantastic. And I want to hear Rise Against, record that song, or Strike Anywhere, some good punk band. It's like, with all that distortion that you're not hearing, it really sounds good. Other people have commented, too. Great sounds. They have no idea. It's totally accidental.
It's just an overdriven. I got a new guitar. It's a Martin D35, so it's very noisy.
It's a wonderful new guitar, but it's not supposed to sound like that. Just so people out there know. I bet it sounds great when it's not distorted, too.
Yes, it does, yeah.
Thank you so much, Rob.
Thank you. I'm going to go back in the kitchen and do the cooking, but I'll watch the rest on the phone.
Oh, yeah.
Hey, really nice to see you, mate.
Great to see you.
Thanks for having me.
Thank you.
Thank you.
We have two more wonderful guests coming right up. Now we see it's not just the bookshelf, but there's a person in front of the bookshelf. Hey, Mike Marker. Great to have you back. What's happening in British Columbia? There, you look like you're ready for a safari with that hat on.
I wanted to wear this hat because I want to make a couple statements about, you see, the band is an indigenous design. So this is actually a hat that is made by indigenous people here in Canada. So it's a Coast Salish design, and by a Coast Salish artist. And I am living right now on the unceded ancestral territory of the Musqueam people, and one of their great artists, Susan Point. I told you that I ended up talking with the president a couple of weeks ago, right?
The president of the university, right?
Yeah, not the president of the United States.
Yeah, right. Well, no, I assumed it wasn't that president.
I think I would do more than talk to that guy.
Just to clarify.
No.
Which president?
You know what? I don't want to listen to him either.
No.
That guy is a psychopathic lunatic.
Hard to avoid.
But every day I watch like PBS, you know, the news hour. And it's like, you know, you think he's done all that is possible to do with, you know, I mean, this would be a Mel Brooks movie. You know what I mean? This is like so absurd. And then you see him say something else that is completely more nuts than the last thing. And that's not to mention his tweets. You know what I'm talking about, David? It's like, this guy is off the charts. Anyway, I want to connect with Steve here a little bit and say, man, I'm like you, except for this. So I'm both an American citizen. I was living in Bellingham. I used to do, actually, David mentioned him, and Dana Lyons. I used to do gigs with Dana, you know, and what a funny, cool guy. And I always wondered, David, do you know this? Did Pete Seeger ever do Cows with Guns? I can't imagine Pete singing that song.
I don't know. I know Pete was definitely a fan of Dana's,
Did he ever?
Not that I've heard.
If there would be a recording of Pete Seeger.
Oh, it would be brilliant. He could do a great cover of that song.
Wouldn't that have been a great, that would have been so cool. Anyway, as an American citizen and a permanent resident of Canada, I was doing some gigs in Victoria. At the Victoria Folk. Actually, David, haven't you played there at some point?
Once in 2014.
Yeah. It's a cool gig, isn't it?
It was a great gig. I wish I could get it again. Maybe sometime before I die.
Well, yeah, that's my point. If the border ever opens. So
And if they want to hire somebody like me again after whatever happened last time, you know, well, I mean, I'm sure somebody complained. Who is this guy singing about Israel being an apartheid state?
Man, no, Canadians are, I mean, they are, yeah, they are very traditional. So I can dig it, you know.
They used to have a Utah there every year.
Absolutely, yeah.
I've arrogantly hoped that I would be the new guy they have every year after Utah died.
Why wouldn't you, man? I mean,
it makes sense.
You would be great. And not only that, you know, I mean, I hate to say it, but the politics in folk music.
They need help, and everybody were telling me. Everybody was saying, "We miss Utah being here every year. Where are the politics? They're, you know, come
damn
back."
Straight. Like, damn straight. No, 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 totally. So yeah. I was doing a bunch of gigs in Victoria. Those are the last live performance that I have done. That was in March. That was in early March. I'm looking at the screen at UVic, and it's scrolling like late breaking news. Every 30 seconds, another country going under. The pandemic is just like happening. I get emails from people saying, you better watch your ass. The prime minister is going to close the border. You better be on the right side of the border when that happens. So I did. I got back to Bellingham. I threw a bunch of clothes in the car. And Evelyn was kind enough to say, I got a room. I got a house. Come here. And so I've been very blessed, you know, to be. And I mean, I hate to say it, Steve, you're gonna love this, man. But it's probably the greatest country in the world. I mean, I think it must be. And that's a shame because, you know, I used to get into these discussions with Pete. We got into a big argument about a song of mine that he sang, and I wrote a last verse, and that's what I want to do today. I wrote a last verse for it that he did not like. So when I went to Europe, you know, Toshi was way more practical about Americans. I mean, this is a major theme. This is a major problem that we have is, you know, I mean, everybody has been hinting at it. Who are these people? Where do they come from? You know, what kind of a crazy country is this? And if you had a border with this country, would you like want to let them in? Probably not. And so why? What is it about them? And Pete would always say, the American people are good people. They have simply been misled. And it's up to us to recognize the good in America and to show that and to call out those evil things that are threatening a great people and a great nation. Pete was a patriot. I mean, my dad said, son, you're hanging out with a communist. You know that? Yeah. Well, then later on, before he died, my dad said, maybe one of the greatest Americans of all time was Pete Seeger. And I just never realized it when it was, you know, Vietnam War era and all those times. So I wrote a song and Pete was singing it all over the country. It's called What Do They Make in Washington? And I thought this song was really good to revive and do for you all because it's a song that asks a question. When I went to live in London and play all the clubs in the UK, I traveled all around. And it's funny, you know, thinking about Rob and, you know, his guitar, you know, that distorted guitar thing. I was learning, Martin Carthy was teaching me to play this one tune, and he stops and he says, oh, you know, I can't get away from this because of me jackhammer thumb from me rock and roll days. He would always like do this wang distorted kind of blast out of no matter what kind of tune he was playing. So when I went to play in Europe, Toshi wrote to me, Toshi Seeger, and she said, and again, she was way more practical about Americans, way more realistic for all kinds of reasons than Pete was. And she said, Michael, do not be the kind of American that all of Europe and the whole world always sees and thinks about. So I started, when I was there, I was walking along the Thames River and I saw a newsstand and they had an issue of Newsweek magazine, overseas edition. And the headline said, Washington, D.C., wealthiest city in the United States per capita income. And I kept walking in the fog of that London evening. And I just started to say to myself, what do they make in Washington? So this is kind of a, it starts off with a little Fantasia, a little, I brought my banjo this time, you know, I've been playing guitar. And I just thought, well, I've done some banjo work that kind of on my own for some, just actually not even singing, just playing banjo for a couple of albums. So, you know, like being a, I'm not that great of a banjo player, but, you know, people would have me do like, you know, studio stuff, like really good musicians do, you know. So I did some stuff on a couple albums lately. So I guess I'm starting to take myself more seriously as a banjo player. So I thought maybe, all right, bring banjo. I'll do one of the Macon, Washington. We'll see if we can knit it all together. This is called a What Are They Making Washington Fantasia. Was a teacher in a fifth grade classroom teaching geography, all about the goods and the products from the cities all across the country. The lesson, it was over when a little kid raised his hand and said, "Please tell me, teacher, for I do not understand. Tell me, what do they make in Washington to give to all of the nation? The Detroit people, they make the cars. Miami takes vacations. We get those big potatoes from Boise, Idaho. But what do they make in Washington? What is it that they grow? For I have seen them on the TV. They all drive big black cars. They live in fancy houses. Oh, I hear they live like movie stars. Oh, and my dad says that that's the place where half of his money goes. So what do they make in Washington? What is it that they grow? Tell me, what do they make in Washington yet to give to all of the nation? Detroit people, they make the cars. Miami takes vacation. We get those big potatoes, Boise, Idaho. But what do they make in Washington? What is it that they grow? Now the teacher, she was bewildered, as teachers often are. She knew that this young student had taken things a little too far. So lacking for an answer, here's what she did say. That is a very good question. We'll save it for another day. But what do they make in Washington to give to all of the nation? The Detroit people, they make the cars. Miami takes vacations. We get those big potatoes from Boise, Idaho. But what do they make in Washington? What is it that they grow? Now, you'd think that this would be the end of the song, and it used to be. And then things just kept evolving. And it looked like things were changing a bit. And the idea of the song started to expand. So I wrote a last verse to really accommodate something about what the United States of America has become. Not that it can't change, but it's become a place where very, very selfish people and are misled by even more selfish and greedy kings and despots and dictators. So, you know, corruption not only trickles up, it trickles down too. People need to find the soul of the history and legacy that they still have. So I wrote this last verse. You know, Pete Seeger, who sang this song a lot, he didn't really like this last verse too much, but I think Toshi did. Now the student could not get an answer, so he continued to watch TV. And he watched 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 and he grew up and he finally, now he drives a monster SUV. He hears what they're saying in Washington. You're either against us or on our side. He's selfish and he's spoiled and addicted to oil and he's hated the whole worldwide. What can we learn from Washington to educate this nation? Detroit people, don't make the cars now, cause of corporate globalization. The workers are little children in Asia and Mexico. But what do they make in Washington still? What is it that they grow? What do they make in Washington to give to all of the nation? Detroit people, they make the cars. Miami takes vacations. We get those big potatoes from Boise, Idaho. But what do they make in Washington? What is it that they grow?
Thank you very much, Mike Marker. Hope to see you again soon.
Yeah, thanks. I'll see you next week, David.
Good. Well, moving right along to Washington, D.C., Lucy Murphy. What else do they make in Washington? I think your mic is muted there. Wonderful. Yes. Now we can hear you.
I would like to say to Mike Marker that Washington, there are many layers of reality here. And of course, the layer that most people see is the White House, the Congress, the Senate, and the agencies. But this has long been an intellectual mecca because of the historical Black colleges and universities and libraries. So people like Gerald Horn come to DC to go through our Moreland Spingarn Research Room and Library of Congress, which has things that you cannot find elsewhere.
Yeah, but so many layers.
Yeah. Someone posted a version of John Hancock's song, Mean Things, posted it on the People's Music Network list. And they neglected to say who John Hancock was. People who were singing the song were not of the same ethnic derivation as John Hancock. I thought that, you know, this was yet another example of Black people being overlooked again, or something created by Black people was being appropriated by white folks and the origin was forgotten. So
who was John Hancock? We're not talking about John Hancock, or the
No. We're talking about an organizer, a sharecropper labor organizer who organized a sharecropper's union that your neighbor, Mike Honey, up there in Washington State, which is what, next door to you, wrote a book about him. And I suggested people put Mike Honey and John Hancock in Google and they'll come up with the book and with songs. It's a different spelling. I believe it's H-A-N-D-C-O-X. For the sharecropper organizer. And he lived to a ripe old age, and I got to meet him at the Great Labor Arts Exchange in the 80s. Mike and Pete Seeger brought him. So, yeah. And, you know, he sings about a union movement which was later, I don't want to use any bad words, but
it's okay, we're not on TV.
It was just eviscerated when they got rid of all of those good communist organizers.
Yeah. And
the best union organizers were communists.
Yeah.
Some of the best people in this country were members of the Communist Party USA. So I'm tired of people apologizing, you know, or talking about, you know, bad mouthing the communists, because if we still had the communists running the unions, we might have some union membership that's greater than 7% or whatever it is trickled down to now.
It could be a whole different country if not for these certain key moments, like when the AFL-CIO formed and all the communists were kicked out of the union. There's so many key junctures like that. Who knows what could have happened, right? If the Poor People's Yes. March had been in D.C. and Martin Luther King hadn't been assassinated. I mean, there's just so many of those Yes. junctures, right?
Yes, yes. And I know a friend of mine who recently passed, Jack O'Dell, you know, was a communist, was Martin Luther King's right hand, and was kind of just kind of got tired of all the harassment that you get in this country for telling the truth, and ended up moving to Canada, like our friend Steve Deasy.
And like Mike Marker, like two of our previous guests on this open mic today. Yeah, both of them, Americans who moved to Canada.
Wow. Okay. And of course, we understand that Canada has issues also, if we talk to our First Nations people, but yeah.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, that's for darn sure. That's for darn
there
sure.
I mean,
Canada looks great when you compare it to the U.S., but when you compare it to civilization, how it should be, it's really falls short.
Yeah. So anyway, John Hancock took tunes that people knew, and like so many of our great organizers, you know, Joe Hill and all those folks, they take tunes that people know, that people are used to singing along with their beer or their, you know, communion wine or whatever, and they put words that are meaningful and topical. So John Hancock's took the song, Say No to the Devil, Say No, Say No to the Devil, Say No. The devil, he is a deceiver, don't mean nobody no good. Say no to the devil, say no. And that tune became the foundation of There Are Mean Things Happening in This Land. There are mean things happening in this land, but the union's going on and the union's going strong. There are mean things happening in this land. On the 18th day of May, the union called a strike. The planters and the bosses throw the people out of their shacks. There are mean things happening in this land. There are mean things happening in this land, but the union's going on and the union's going strong. There are mean things happening in this land. They throw the people off of the land where many years they'd spent. And in the hard, cold winter time, they had to live in tents. There are mean things happening in this land. There are mean things happening in this land. Lots of groceries on the shelves, but we have none for ourselves. There are mean things happening in this land. There are mean things happening in this land. There are mean things happening in this land. Lots of groceries on the shelves, but we have none for ourselves. There are mean things happening in this land.
Mm. Yeah, fantastic. Lucy, what's been going on in D.C. over the past couple weeks since last I saw you? I mean, a hell of a lot, but you got any particular comments?
Well, there's just, you know, endless demonstrations. The area above the White House is Lafayette Park, and the area above Lafayette Park is two blocks, which have the police have blocked off the traffic, motor traffic, completely. The mayor, who's a rather strange person, but she did something that surprised all of us. She had those two blocks, the street, the black asphalt, painted Black Lives Matter in huge letters that cover the whole street. And so now that is a Black Lives Matter plaza where people come every day to demonstrate and to show that this movement has consistency. It's not going away, because, you know, almost every day another innocent person is shot by the police.
Two nights ago in Portland, a demonstrator was hit in the head with a tear gas canister that was fired directly at his head, and he's in critical condition in the hospital, and he's quite likely going to die. Yeah, and it's happening every day. And then cars running into protests. Has this been happening in D.C. too?
In D.C., but yes, I hear about it happening. Maybe that's the reason why the police completely blocked off this area so that no cars can enter.
That would be a very good reason if they're actually looking out for people. Yeah. Thanks so much for joining us, Lucy. You got another song before we go, perhaps?
No. I just wanted to thank you, and I hope that you will join us with the People's Music Network open mics, which there's one coming up this Friday.
Oh, great.
from 7:30 to 9:30, and you have until Wednesday to register. You can go on the website, peoplesmusic.org, and look for the online song and poetry swaps and register. And if you are not a member of People's Music Network, I will tell you very quietly, you can register as G-U-S-T.
Excellent.
Be my guest.
Thank you, Lucy.
Thank you, David.
See you again. Bye-bye. And this concludes the 12th weekly Pandemic Open Mic Monday. And yeah, I need to check out the People's Music Network open mics that they do. And you guys should all do that as well. I'm doing broadcasting 5 days a week, so I just seem to not get around to doing much else. But I'll be back on this platform, whatever platform you're watching on, tomorrow morning, or tomorrow morning Pacific time, 10 a.m., 1 p.m. Eastern, 6 p.m. GMT, 7 p.m. in Copenhagen, to do Fifth Estate Live, to host Fifth Estate Live. And then I'll be doing other live stream shows at the same time, Wednesday through Friday this week, interviewing various folks, keeping up the 5 day a week schedule for the time being, at least. And I hope to see you all online and in the streets. Don't pay the rent. Mutual aid will get us through. Bye for now.